Welcome to the Control Freaks podcast, where Bill Bensing and I, Clarissa Lucas, work to bridge the tech and audit divide so auditors and technologists can work together and help each other rather than getting in each other's way. I've been looking forward to this episode for a little while now because I've had the pleasure and the opportunity to work with both of our guests before. So today we welcome Mike Luzinger and Andy Kalinko to Control Freaks. So let me introduce them. Mike is the co-chair of the Open Group Security Forum and the Associate Vice President and Chief Architect of Information Risk Management at Nationwide Insurance. He has nearly 30 years of experience in technology and has his MIS degree from Wright State University. Andy Kalinko is an IT audit consultant and audit project manager at Nationwide Insurance. He's got almost 20 years of experience, mostly in IT audit, and also a degree in MIS from The Ohio State University. I've had the absolute pleasure of working with both Andy and Mike previously, and they're two of the best people to work with. And I'm not just saying that because they're here. They can explain deeply technical concepts in a way that a non-technical person like myself can understand incredibly well. They're also probably some of the easiest people to work with. And Andy audits Mike, and they're both here and smiling. So clearly they've figured out some of the ways to bridge that gap between tech and audit. So welcome to the show, Andy and Mike.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us. Good to see you again.
You too. In this episode, we are going to have Mike and Andy talk about policy as code, which, Bill, I know that is near and dear to your heart. Bill and I first met, he was giving a talk about policy as code at an event, and Bill, your excitement and passion about the topic came through to everyone in the audience. So we've got both hosts here are super excited about the guests we've got. So before we dive into all of that, you know I'm a big, what problem are we trying to solve? What are we trying to accomplish here? So the goal of today's episode on policy as code is to give listeners a technology expert's perspective as well as an audit expert's perspective on this topic. Everybody ready to dive in?
Awesome. Let's do it.
So because we have a pretty diverse group of people in the audience with varying levels of knowledge on these topics that we cover, let's start with some of the basics. What is policy as code and what is its goal? Or like I like to say, what problem is it trying to solve?
That's a great question. One of the obvious truths of policy as code is it's much easier to do via cloud than your traditional on-prem technologies. Companies like Nationwide and others, many companies still in kind of a hybrid workload, right? We still have some on-prem as well as cloud-based. We're absolutely intending to get to more policy as code on-prem, but also using the opportunity to kind of do it where it's most native and where it's easiest, which is in the cloud. So it's kind of following along with our journey of moving into the cloud. And as we become more mature, Nationwide's been in the cloud for several years now, but we continue to mature everything in the cloud, including our compliance and so forth. And so really policy as code is just kind of riding that same wave of momentum.
And I would add that what I see is that there are pockets where policy as code is being used with great success. And it just depends on the underlying technology and the use cases. I've seen it used in the pipeline for delivery of APIs, where it's easy to put those checks and hard stops. Also, as Mike said, in a cloud environment as well, automation of certain policies, and it's making things easier for the auditors, which I love, but is also, back to my previous point, is we have to learn a lot more.
Makes it easier for the auditors, but also makes it easier in turn then for the clients, because then hopefully the audits are a little bit easier for and smoother for everyone involved.
I would ask a quick question. So you said it's making easy on the auditor. I know Clarissa talked about sort of the talk earlier this year. I gave him policy as code, and I'll blow it off. I have this concept. There's no such thing as policy as code. We probably won't cover it here today. But with that being said, Andy, from an auditor's perspective, and Mike, from what you're doing, you said that this is helpful for auditors. It sounds like, and I'll translate, Mike and Andy, what you're talking about is you're talking about stops in like a pipeline. Could you tell me exactly when you go in to audit something, how are you from an auditor's perspective and Mike from the tech, what gap are you bridging that exists without policy as code in the implementation that you guys have put together?
Well, I, I'll, I'll take this question first, and I think there is a lot there to unpack. So definitely give me follow-up questions if I don't answer it fully. But I would say where it's easier for us is that we have changed value proposition to our clients, where everybody's very busy right now, and everybody has a lot of different things on their plate. So therefore, we can come with more agile approach and say that, well, instead of asking you for so many hours and so much commitment, is that we have access to the tools. We'll go ahead and we'll extract the necessary evidence so you don't have to do that. Of course, the flip side of the coin is knowing how to use those tools, knowing what to look for. But at least we are able to grow our muscles and pass that learning, not just to the members of my immediate team, but to other colleagues in the department. It's also somewhat easier for us to take the enterprise requirements and standards and then better compare them to specific codifiable or pieces of code scripts and see where there is that one-to-one match. And so our conversations and becomes more is, okay, so where, like, show me where, how you're covering this requirement, how are you covering that? So that's the first part of, I think, your question. And then remind me again, what was the second part, like bridging the gap?
Yeah, so how's it bridging the gap? So just to make sure I understand, basically what you said, and I'm going to put it in my own words, just make sure I crystal clear this. It's like, for example, Mike, as you've driven policy as code into what you're delivering from an infrastructure and a software perspective, you're giving Andy and Andy's team access to these policy as code tools, which OPA is a common one. I'm not saying you use OPA, but some of our listeners will be familiar with it. So they'll look at some like scripts. And so Andy, what you're saying is you're learning a bit of the Rego's of language, how to look at things. And so you're now having a different conversation with Mike, and the conversation before would be like, hey, Mike, give me the evidence and show me how you're doing this. And now the conversation's more like, I can go in and self-serve and see, here's the control activities looking for these specific things. Here's how they map to these controls, and then answer the question, am I sort of doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Is that an accurate summary of what you just said?
It's an accurate summary, yes. And it also leads to realizing efficiencies when it comes to continuous monitoring and continuous auditing as well. And lastly, we are able to build better partnerships with our partners in technology as well, where we are no longer seen as just those guys who come in and request all of the stuff and then we disappear. It feels just more collaborative partnership approach in that way.
And what are some of the key Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just going to jump on the collaborative part of this, right? Because, you know, as you were answering there, Andy, you mentioned the APIs earlier on, right? And when I look at the benefits of policy as code, there's a couple things it brings. Like, one is just overall enablement. And so, you know, Nationwide has had a strategy of releasing more of our product set through APIs. As we're doing so, right, we want to make sure we're doing securely, we have privacy in mind, all of those things that we're well known for. How do we enable that and move fast and as frictionless as possible, but, you know, still have those checks in place? And that's where there's been a really great partnership between audit and then like my security architecture team and so forth. Where policy as code to me has been the big game changer is not having to translate as much anymore. And Bill, I think you kind of alluded to this, right? Where we're just putting the OPA stuff out there, right? And then Andy and folks can hit it with Rego, see it exactly in the state that we use for the policy control points, right? Policy enforcement engines, policy decision points, depending on the different vendors, you know, platforms, they all have those kind of concepts built in. OPA is the heart of much of that. I don't have to translate that for Andy and his team to go in there and understand what's going on, right? So I think not having to translate that just brings a whole layer of efficiency that we were struggling with before.
So then that probably answers the second part of that question, Andy. The gap, Mike, you just hit it, was the translation. So before there was a back and forth translation, and now there's a common understanding. And as you were using the term collaboration, did you mean that as you guys come together, you work together, that's actually the gap that's being resolved in that collaboration? We're doing this mutual understanding sort of once it's become codified, and now we can move on to the next things. Is that what I hear you saying? Oh, okay.
You know, that's interesting that they bring that up. And Bill, I'm looking at you because I think about, and going back to when you were presenting on Policy as Code, you hosted a workshop as well. And I was the only auditor in the at the group, and there were a bunch of other people from different parts of technology. And we realized we were all talking using the same words, but they all meant very different things. So when I said policy, I meant one thing, but somebody else meant something else. And it just meant so many different things. So it's interesting that that came up here too, is one of the gaps being, I'm going to call it a language barrier, but not in the sense that we would normally think. Like, we're all saying the same thing. We think we mean the same thing, but we mean totally different things, which can cause a lot of friction. So by bridging that gap and being able to use the same terminology and have that same understanding really helped with that, strengthening those relationships and help making it much smoother. Is that a fair analogy?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Clarissa, I'll go back to many years ago. I'm not sure if you remember this. I think you were only tangentially involved, but like we went back and forth. I remember the technology team going back and forth with audit on what the difference between a database and an instance is. And it was Microsoft describes it in one way for SQL Server. Oracle describes it in the exact opposite way for Oracle Server. And so, you know, as DBAs, database technologist, right, like it kind of was just something we had assumed and dealt with every day and didn't really recognize that dichotomy or that the nature of that. And then working with audit was confusing as heck, right, to our audit partners. And I mean, it just,
and
that's
for you
just
all as well too, right? You're like, we are saying this, we know what this means. How are they not getting it? And they're like, I don't know what they're talking about, they're saying two different things.
exactly. And I mean, just one out of countless, right, examples.
Yep.
But yeah, pretty funny.
And I also want to say is that throughout the period of times that I've been involved with Policy as Code and understanding it, I gained more appreciation to the work that Mike and his team are doing, because there are a lot of benefits to Policy as Code for the auditor. One of the biggest downsides is that there's just so much technological knowledge and beyond the high level understanding that it just forces us to be better, not at the same level, not as somebody who's doing it day to day, but definitely up our game, just because otherwise we won't have as much credibility with our clients. Like, even ability to understand the terms and speak the same language and guide more intelligent questions.
And I think that's kind of something Clarissa hit on, right? So as code, for something to be as code, that means it's being documented somewhere, right? And there's probably a structure or a schema, you know, some kind of a structure to that. It's forcing you to make those decisions on how are you labeling that? What are you going to call this? Is it a policy? Is it a process? Is it a guideline? You know, at that level, is it a database? Is it an instance? Is it a, you know, how do you define these things? And to your point, Andy, just going through that exercise of embedding it as code forces you to go through that. And I'm a big believer, like, okay, that seems like it's a little bit of friction. Now we have to decide these things. But deciding them once is much better than, you know, hours and hours of hallway discussions. And Clarissa, to your point earlier, just like talking past each other and, you know, confusion, and then meetings to sort through the confusion. Define it once, clarity of understanding, move on.
So you both have started hitting on some of the things that I wanted to cover next. And I wanted to separate them for clarity, because I know when I get asked two questions in one, I always forget the second one, but I'm going to combine them. So if you forget the second half, stop me and ask me for it again. But you've highlighted some of these, but can we summarize some of those advantages and disadvantages of leveraging Policy as Code?
Andy, why don't you start with the advantages, then I'll be that architect who comes with all the naysaying disadvantages.
You see, I already had some disadvantages also in mind, but from the audit perspective, well, I see that it's allowing us to do more continuous audit and continuous monitoring. It's allowing us to obtain evidence without having to go through the client. So it reduces on all that manual interaction. It also feel like for the enterprise, just provide better defense mechanism, because there are hard stops in place, and therefore developers can mess things up, but there will be enough hard stops to prevent a security vulnerability going into production.
So recapping, enables continuous auditing and continuous monitoring, which provides more continuous assurance to stakeholders about the control environment versus periodic every so many years or so many months, depending on the audit lifecycle. Self-service by internal audit, so we can get what we need, we know what we're looking for, reduces those chances of lack of miscommunication with, I say I want a pen, I meant I wanted a blue pen, and Andy, you gave me a black pen, and that's not what I wanted. Instead, I could just go grab the pen that I want. And then the third thing you mentioned, and again, these are my words summarizing, not yours, but stronger controls through automating things that are sometimes done manually. So if there's manual checks or manual preventive controls, this is more of an automated, a hard stop, not a business judgment or anything. It is a more of an automated control in the front end.
Absolutely. And this is, of course, this list is just a few things that pop into my head. The one more I would like to mention is from the regulatory compliance perspective for those organizations, for those companies that have those requirements, that provides much greater degree of security and compliance with those requirements as well.
Awesome. Thank you.
So and Andy, definitely jump in here with, you said you had some in mind as well, but I'll get us started here with the challenges that I see with policy as code. Two come to mind for me. One is just dealing with heterogeneity. So, you know, very few large organizations are homogeneous and can just say, this is our standard, this is our one platform, it's all going to apply very cleanly, and we're good to go, right? We all know we're dealing with generative AI and AI and ML disruption. I think pretty much every large organization out there is just dealing with this onslaught of new platforms and technologies and patterns and, you know, retrieval augmented generation patterns, and it just going on and on and on, right? And those are bringing new vendors. Each of those vendors have their own ways of dealing with things like policy or infrastructure as code. You know, it is great that there are some standards out there, like what Bill mentioned. But to get down into the actual control level, right, you're getting into proprietary schemas and just proprietary controls, and having to keep up with that is going to remain to be a challenge. I do see, that's one of the things I look for in vendors these days, is how do they help us stay ahead of that? And then getting more comfortable both from an audit and kind of a technology team perspective, and really leaning on your vendor for what are their best practices and what are their standard, you know, NIST or CISA or, you know, their standard compliance templates, NACHA, PCI, and so forth. Because trying to keep up with it, I remember, you know, not that many years ago, working with our internal audit partners on having a Word doc and going through and like line item by line item, how do these controls apply to, again, like a database platform? Like those days are long gone, right? I mean, all software now is basically, you know, moving to cloud and SaaS, and like versions are just kind of ephemeral, and there's constantly new features that are being released. Every new feature brings a new opportunity for either breaking an existing control or an opportunity for a new control. And to me, to keep up with that, you really need to lean on your vendors and industry standards. That's kind of one thing, is just dealing with that complexity. The second thing that comes to mind is the responsibility for setting and managing policy as code. You know, we recently wrote just an internal paper with a couple of my good friends here on just what's a point of view? How is the industry looking at policy as code, and really what does it mean to Nationwide? And one of the things that was shared in that point of view paper is it's pretty early days for policy as code, right? It's not a really well established, well documented process. And so like really defining who owns the different levels of management of policy as code is still up in the air, I think, as an industry, and certainly in my experience as well.
And Mike, kind of getting back to one of the, I'm sensing a theme in a lot of this episode of using the same vocabulary. Part of, if you just Google policy as code, you'll get a lot of different definitions as to what that actually means. So having an organization within an organization aligned on what does that mean to that organization, and making sure that all the lines, the technologists, the risk managers, and the auditors understand what that is. So yeah, I'm seeing a definite theme coming out of this episode that was totally unintentional, but that's what's coming out.
There you go.
I could steal those whole hour, and I'm not going to do it, but I'll make a thing. That's my assertions. There's no such thing as policy as code. I'll defend that real quick, by the way, because the concepts behind policy as code, as you both demonstrated today, they're viable concepts. At the end of the day, what you're doing is you're codifying first line control activities, which then leads to more explicit and an objective evidence on the second line. And then that together helps the third line figure out if what you're doing actually is, you know, mitigating risks, as opposed to the other one. Where I get hung up on policy is when you look at the GRC and the audit, just the risk management GRC and all the other domains, take the tech out of it. Policy is a high level statement of intent. It's not a low level action. And so one thing I've been looking at recently is like, okay, let's not change policy as code as it's implemented, but let's look at the changing the way we look at it. And like, I think I've driven Clarissa nuts with this to death in some of our other conversations where I'm looking and it's like, okay, you have controls, which is sort of like, I don't know, it's not a requirement, but your control could be like, for example, change management. I have a change management process. That's how I control stuff, right? Well, as you both know, like those are very ambiguous. So how do you get down to things like control activities? Now, what I can codify is the discovery and or the control activity. Like, you know, for example, two people in a peer review, like Bill can't be the same person that pushes production. That right there, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike and Andy, that tends to be the analogous stuff you're looking at when you talk about policy as code. Am I correct?
Absolutely.
So then when you see that, it's like really what you're doing is you're codifying control activities. And when you bring it to the second line, then you codify tests. So like if you think about like basically test-driven design, things like that, you can codify a test of some evidence you expect. So you have codified control tests, codified control activities. And then if you map that together, then you can ultimately say, we show we do our policy. But like Mike, as you point out, and actually in some of our previous conversations, like policy as code goes back like 15 years. I remember the first time I could find it was like around 2014, 15. It was when Amazon and HashiCorp were getting ready to sell PCI and HIPAA compliant infrastructure to the insurance. Like, and I couldn't find anything before that, but I was using Google Scholar. So like the question is, was it on the internet versus not the internet? But continuous compliance was there for a while. But anyways, I'll stop there with my diatribe as I go through it. I make those statements like policy as code doesn't exist. A lot of it is like the question I ask is, and maybe I'll dig deeper in this. If you guys find this going into questions, like I find the since the domain of tech and the domain of, I'll just call it GRC and assurance, just broadly speaking, are incongruent with their terms. But it seems like really this is the first example because of Clarissa. If you remember back to that little thing I held, I asked anybody whose auditors pay any attention to their policy as code. Nobody in the room raised their hand. And I asked the second question. I was like, even if you do it, do you still have to go through this traditional like audit process to prove everything? They're like, yes. And so Andy and Mike, you were the first people I've come across that I've seen do this. And so anyways, this is where I'm getting the story is like, I wonder if maybe open comments on this one. If we were to redefine this, would there be any, from your perspectives, it seems to be working well as it is, but do you believe there would be any advantage or disadvantage to realigning those terms and concepts and implementations with something that's more reminiscent of the GRC and audit insurance domains?
Well, I think it really depends on the organization and the size and the structure, because Nationwide as a company has fairly complex IT infrastructure environment. We have various risk management, so second line teams and organizations, and we as a third line, we learned how to operate within that domain. We learned.
Gotcha.
Nationwide figured out is what is second line responsible for versus what third line is responsible for. So it makes it much easier on the front line management to know where their instructions and where the guidance is coming from. So Mike is coming from the organization that is setting the standards, that is interpreting, that is looking at what's out there that is available and providing that guidance and requirements to the first line. And then first line is just going in and, gotcha. and implementing this. I don't think that we have too much difficulty with the terminology, just because we have governing bodies that are kind of saying like, this is what this is.
Okay.
I think it's more senior management at times thinks that policies code, for example, perhaps can be more easily applied to such complex environment, and unfortunately it takes more time and resources to put it for things like on-prem and legacy technology. So therefore, there is always the pockets where it's implemented much better, and pockets where more legacy processes are in place that require maybe more human love, care, and attention.
Yeah, and Andy. Oh yeah, go ahead, Clarissa.
I was just going to say, and what might also be unique in this situation here compared to the audience from, and keep in mind there weren't auditors in the audience either, so it was good to have that perspective from the audit clients. But we talked about this in the beginning, is, you know, Andy and Mike have cultivated a strong collaborative relationship. So Andy's not just walking in with what did we audit last year. He is collaborating with Mike to understand how do we manage risk in this space today and how are we going to manage it tomorrow. So if he were to walk in with how did we audit it last year, 5 years ago, you know, depending on what the frequency is, yeah, he's probably going to be going through the traditional process, which is probably what some of those people in the audience experienced, was, yeah, we've moved to policy as code or something else in this situation, but the auditors are still asking for this evidence from that's outdated, an outdated way of having me pull that evidence, whereas focus on the collaboration. And this is part of where, you know, bridging that tech and audit divide that Andy and Mike have successfully done is understanding I'm not coming with my checklist. I'm coming with what is important to you? What is important to the success of the business? How are you managing that? And then figuring out how best to test it. And in some cases it ends up, oh, it's best if I can just pull this myself. I don't have to ask you, even more of an independent pull. So I think that's something that as organizations move towards more of an agile way of working in internal audit and applying agility and focusing on that collaborative approach, I think you'll see more of a shift if you ask that same audience to a group where they have that stronger relationship and more collaboration with their clients. Like, I know you were going to say something, but I wanted to jump in with that.
I love it, though, because you said it much more eloquently than I would have. But now I'll just try to add around that. But you're going exactly where I was going. I was, you know, this is a podcast. We're having fun. Hopefully the listeners are having fun. I'll put my hot take out there is it's an inevitable future. It's the only way that this scales to technology moving forward, right? And Bill, you know, I also don't want to dismiss what you brought up, because you're exactly right. Like, in today's world, you can do all the policy code as you want. You bring an external auditor, they're not going to, you know, they're not just going to trust all of that policy as code. They're going to go in and do, you know, the more traditional audit and verification and so forth, and even somewhat internally audit at Nationwide and at other companies, right? So the industry is not there yet, but I do think it's an inevitable future. I kind of liken it to, you know, what you've seen with zero trust. Bill, you were talking about like the term and what does it mean? And, you know, Clarissa, you said you Googled it and had all these, you know, if you look at my bio and background, I've done a lot of speaking on zero trust lately. It's even worse. You know, policy as code to me is a much clearer concept than what zero trust is. Except if you really just want to boil it down to it's what zero trust is to more than anything else is it's a mindset and really making sure that you're verifying those assumptions. And then, you know, you lay that into network and identity and those kinds of things if you want to get geeky about it. But similarly with policy as code, I mean, I definitely hear you, Bill, on, you know, policy or your higher level statements. That's not really what you're embedding into the code and those kinds of things. But conceptually, like hearing what, you know, what Clarissa's describing, what you see with like Andy and I, and we've been working through, I think it fits really well. And I think it's where we need to go to where, you know, it's the same thing of observability in the cloud native architectures, you know, distributed computing, this whole move from like monitoring to observability and to really meeting things. And now I will go into zero trust, like getting as close to the asset as possible, right? With your controls and everything else, you don't rely on the perimeter anymore. Like there are all these different dimensions that are all coming together, all these different mindsets that are coming together to be able to manage the complexity that they're all dealing with today. And so for that, I think policy as code has a nice long life ahead of it. Bill, I definitely think there's an opportunity to give it a better term or a better name. So we'll look for your trademark. But as far as an overall concept goes, I think the overall mindset of it is really powerful. Andy and I are excited to see, you know, how far we can push that internally. And then, you know, Clarissa and folks just speaking to everyone out there and how do we really make this agile. You know, I'm very hopeful. It's easy. The security architect in me is easy to get really doom and gloomful about all the complexity that's hitting us with, you know, without a whole lot of added budget, right? We're all doing more with less, but I think it's concepts like policy as code that are helping us get there.
And Mike, with this being the inevitable future, what advice would you and Andy give to, and I'll say to anybody, but I want to focus first on the auditors because again, Bill, going back to the question you asked the audience at your session, it sounded more like, hey, we're here or we're going there as technologists, but our auditors aren't keeping up. So Mike and Andy, with this being the inevitable future, what can auditors do to prepare for this and stay ahead of that change curve?
I'll give my quicker answer, then definitely looking to Andy to expand on this. I mean, from my side, like being the consumer of the auditor or the partner with the auditor is really just bringing them in early and often. So Clarissa, I think both you and Andy kind of alluded to this, right? We have proactively come to our audit team. I've proactively come to Andy and say, hey, look, I know, you know, we have technology plans around X, Y, and Z. It's going to be hitting sometime this year, next year. I want to make sure you're able to do your job for this. And basically, I'm setting the architecture and the infrastructure up in a way that's going to allow you to do your job and just being proactive about it. Andy?
To add to that, I would say definitely have great working relationship with technology partners. For us, it helped being there early on and ask questions. It also, what I feel where we came in and we helped is we became partners in relaying a message as we go and we audit other teams about the need for standardization of pipelines and tools because our company is big and diverse. And also where I feel we have strengths, we provide a lot of advice on the governance aspect because what we've seen is with the speed of technology change and changes to code, all of it, sometimes there's a thing such as documentation atrophy. And for the first line, it's easy. They own the code, they understand the code, they change it as like when needed, as quick as necessary. But then keeping up all of the supporting documentation, describing in plain English, for example, what it's doing, and then over time priorities change, and that oftentimes is not one of the first priorities to keep up that documentation. And also going back to, as I mentioned, to governance, is just having a structure in place where there is either a governing committee, but there is strategy where it's not it's happening, we're doing it, and that's it. That there is more of this structure where, and I feel that it's an investment definitely on the part of our clients, but then it provides sustainability and making our life a little bit easier.
I love how you said an investment because we're always looking for that return on our investment. We're not just spending time with the auditors, we're investing time with the auditors for that return on investment. So I think this is really important and I want to play some of these back. And again, this is kind of my interpretation of what you both said, but proactively bringing your auditors in early and often so that they can get that foundational understanding of what it is you're trying to accomplish and how you're going about doing that. Building and maintaining strong relationships between auditors and audit clients. I picked this out of kind of the background of what you were saying, Andy, but being partners with a shared goal. So you talked about a shared message. You both shared the same goal. And if we get back to the core of auditing, you know, we want, as auditors, want our organizations to succeed, and everyone else within the organization wants the organization to succeed. So we do have that shared goal, but we often kind of lose sight of that. So I love how you inadvertently pointed that one out. Also, leveraging strengths from both sides of the table. So Andy, you mentioned being experts in risks and controls and auditing, whereas maybe not at first experts in policy as code, and maybe never being those true experts in policy as code, but knowing enough to be able to ask the questions and add that value. And then clients leveraging the auditor's expertise in those areas that they bring. And then another, again, this isn't the word that you used, but I could see this in there too, is having empathy for the person on the other side of the table. And I keep saying other side of the table. That's kind of an old language. Auditors and audit clients like going at it after across the table in heated discussions. But just having empathy for, like you said, documentation fatigue. We recognize that our audit clients, documentation is not their first thing that they want to do. And so how can we have that empathy and have more reasonable expectations while still getting that evidence that the risk is managed in a way that makes sense for the organization?
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Awesome. So other than, so I think the number one thing that people can do, both from from an auditor perspective, to learn more about policy as code is talking to their clients. If you had to pick another, like, where else would you direct somebody to go, be it an audit client that wants to learn more about policy as code or an auditor that wants to do a little bit of homework before talking to their clients about policy as code? Do you have any resources that you'd recommend?
Personally, what helped me to understand policy as code and sort of more like how it's implemented is using documentation that Amazon has, so AWS has. So a lot of white papers, and of course, Amazon has their well-architected framework. So, and even reading through that framework allowed me to understand the philosophy behind that AWS, and then also how they envision policy as code and how its implementation. So for me, that's number one resource that worked.
I'll add to that, Bill referred to it earlier, the Open Policy Agent effort. I know they have a website that has a lot of good guidance around it as well. They also have a lot of integration in with many of the vendors that you likely do business with. So good, you know, whether you end up using it as kind of the heart of your policy as code or not, share a lot of good patterns and practices.
And that Open Policy Agent, that's the OPA you all were referring to, right?
Exactly.
I should have asked about that acronym earlier. I was going to Google it afterwards, but I'm glad you defined that for us. All right, we are getting towards the end of the episode. So before we totally wrap up, I want to ask both Andy and Mike, and it doesn't matter who goes first, but what do you want to leave the listeners with?
I'll start. For us, technology auditors, these are tough times because the world is changing so fast and there are so many new concepts and everything. And it's at times feels like we are just barely getting somewhere and there is something new that is happening. So I would say collaboration with technology partners, just talk, ask questions, don't be afraid, and have fun.
Love that. I'll just echo that. I mean, collaboration has always been, you know, a plus, but I think now it's absolutely critical. I think the other thing, you know, I almost alluded to it earlier, but look, you know, I mentioned working with your vendors, but look at the latest compliance guidance that's coming out. So, you know, I mentioned zero trust, and, you know, Bill, just like policy as code, you searched out there and said it's been around, you know, for several years. The idea of zero trust, and then even before that, the Jericho Forum has been around for a couple decades now, but now you're starting to see it get embedded into actual, you know, GRC and different standards, the White House, EO and executive order. You're starting to see it put into NIST and CISA controls and so forth. So just keeping up to date with some of those. And then, you know, again, where can your vendor solutions or any of your homegrown efforts around, you know, scripting that up, adding infrastructure as code, working with your auditors to apply that to policy as code. It's a continuous effort. You mentioned continuous control compliance, right? There's different solutions, different levels of automation. We could geek out over all of that. But I think to Andy's point is just keep the collaboration going, because there's not going to be any one size fits all solution in this space for any organization of scale and size. So, you know, really look towards that collaboration with your internal audit partners and vendors and anyone else that can help.
Oh, this is awesome. Well, Andy, I thank you again. I mean, as I take away the big takeaway, like, we talk about tools, we talk about OPA, we talk about well architect, but really the key here is, like, as you guys said, collaboration. A lot of people use that term of coming together to solve this problem as a team on the internal side. So I think that's the key aspect. I mean, everybody goes back to that, but looking at what you both have done, Andy, for example, you and the auditing team coming to learn a bit of the tech side, Mike, you and the tech team teach them and coming together and saying, here's how this works together. I think that's beautiful. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. This has been great. Love it. Thanks for letting me go on my diatribe about policy as code. More to come on that, by the way. So, Mike, when I start making new terms, I'll send them over your way. But with that being said, thank you all very much. By the way, it was just up at the IT Revolution, the forum this past weekend, and like, I know our normal closing out thing is be a freak, not a foe. But I really loved when I told people to fly their freak flag. Aww. So, policy is code. Get out, fly your freak flag, and see y'all next episode.